Buddha once said, let a person come who is observant and no deceiver, and I will teach that person the Dharma. In other words, the two qualities he was looking for in a student were truthfulness and the ability to be observant and be discerning. Those are the same two qualities he taught his son the very first time he gave a Dharma lesson to Rahula. The first lesson was about being truthful, that if you're not ashamed of telling a deliberate lie, there's really no goodness to you. So this is the principle across the board, to be truthful. And then to be observant, he had Rahula ask himself a series of questions before he acted, while he was acting, and when the action was done. And they had to do with the effect that the action was having, either on himself or on other people. That's what being observant is all about, is looking at the results of your actions. I mean, lots of things you could observe. You could observe lunar eclipses, and you could observe the behavior of raccoons or owls. But what the Buddha wants you to be really observant is, what are you doing, and what are the results of what you're doing, both immediately and in the long term? And even before you act, he asks you to anticipate what the results are going to be. What he's teaching here is a principle called appropriate attention. Notice that Buddha didn't teach bare attention. He taught appropriate attention, looking with a particular agenda. The agenda here being learning how to be more skillful in your actions. This is what he said leads to purity. We want to be compassionate. We want to be discerning. And then we actually have to check our actions before we act. We have to anticipate any harm that's going to come from this action. If so, don't do it. In other words, keep your actions in line with your basic principle of wanting to be compassionate. He taught the same principle to a group of young boys. There are two stories. One time he was on his alms run and he saw some boys who were tormenting a crab. And they asked them, do you like pain? And he said, no. Then why are you inflicting pain on others? Another time some boys were catching fish. And again, he said, do you like pain? Well, no, of course. Well, what do you think about the fish? Even in teaching children, the Buddha was intent on teaching them appropriate attention. He said, this is the most important internal factor for gaining awakening. And you want to start it at an early age. Get used to asking the right questions. And they center on what you're doing right here, right now. If you anticipate trouble, anticipate harm, don't act in that way. If while you're doing something you find that you are causing harm, stop. If you realize after an action that you caused harm, you talk it over with someone else to figure out how to do it better the next time. This is the big issue in life. And these are the questions that the Buddha has you ask. They even apply to the concentration as you're getting more and more skilled at getting the mind to settle down. You look at what you've got, and then you ask yourself, what am I doing that's causing unnecessary stress or unnecessary burden or an unnecessary disturbance in the mind? It's usually a kind of perception. And when you catch that the perception is the problem, then you replace it with a more refined perception. You learn how to see your mental events as actions, as a very immediate kind of karma. Years back, I was giving a talk to a group of people on the topic of karma. They'd been meditating. And most of them had the impression that karma was something that was superfluous in the Buddhist teachings, really didn't have anything to do with the meditation. And so I pointed it out, that you have to look at your meditation as a kind of action. You're creating karma by focusing on the breath. You're creating karma by spreading thoughts of goodwill. It's good karma. But you want to learn how to do it even more and more skillfully. I was getting a lot of blank looks from the group. I found out later that the type of meditation they've been doing was one where you're not supposed to be doing anything at all. Just allow whatever's going to happen and take a totally passive, accepting role to what was happening. But that's not how the Buddha taught meditation. He said he wanted you to see it as a kind of action. And even when things get very refined and very still in the mind, there's always that question, is there any unnecessary stress here? And if so, what are you doing to cause it? What action is causing? Can you drop that action? And this way you get into deeper and deeper stages of concentration, deeper and deeper levels of discernment. So it all starts with this very simple principle of appropriate attention, learning how to ask yourself questions about what you're doing. Are you getting the results you want? If not, what can you do to change, to get better results? The Buddha lists this quality of appropriate attention in the four factors for stream entry. It gets you there to awakening, the first stage, and in fact it carries you all the way through. The Buddha says at another point that for someone who has attained the stream, this is the quality you want to bring to bear on even more subtle levels. The factors for stream entry start with associating with people of integrity, finding people that you trust, people that you find inspiring, and then listen to their dharma. Once you've listened to the dharma, then you apply appropriate attention. You use it to ask questions about your actions. In what ways do your actions measure up, and what ways do they not? And then, of course, you don't just stop with the questions. The final factor is practicing the dharma in line with the dharma. This was the factor the Buddha said was going to keep the dharma alive. And it's our way of showing our respect and gratitude for the Buddha, for his teachings. It means that you don't try to bend the dharma to suit your preferences. You try to bend yourself to fit in with the dharma. And you practice for the purpose of disenchantment. The Pali term, nibbida. It's what leads to dispassion. Passion is what drives the process of fabrication of the mind. In the same way that, say, passion for food is what drives us to fix the food to begin with. We think we're going to get something good out of it. So we keep fabricating things over and over and over again. But again, here you're trying to apply appropriate attention. This process of fabrication you're doing, does it get you the results you want? And as you're working on the path in the beginning, the problem may be that you're actually not really on the path, and so you're not happy with the results. But as you get more and more onto the path, you begin to realize this is a good type of fabrication, so you keep it up. But you look at the other kinds of fabrication that you've been engaged in, and you begin to see their drawbacks. A lot of people complain that as they begin to meditate, they find that things they used to find fascinating and interesting and fun no longer hold any interest anymore. So I ask them, why are you complaining? You begin to realize you're growing up. And this is a lot of what these teachings are all about, learning how to grow up, learning how to really look at your actions, take responsibility for your actions, and then try to bring them in line with what you know is really good. Fortunately, the standards that we're using here are standards that are for the sake of our happiness. You read people like Freud, where there's this huge struggle between your superego and your ego. The superego telling you what you should do and what you should want, and your ego trying to negotiate with your basic desires to find some way of being happy in spite of what the superego is saying. It's a very unfriendly superego in Freud. One of the Buddhist teachings, the superego is very friendly. The Four Noble Truths are there for the sake of your happiness. These are the Buddha's shoulds. You should try to comprehend sufferings. You should try to abandon the cause. Realize the cessation of suffering and develop the path so you can realize the cessation of suffering. All of which are things for your own well-being. So there doesn't have to be that big a conflict. You find that your greed, aversion, and delusion don't like a lot of these shoulds. But then you look at what they're doing for you. They get you, give you some pleasure. If they didn't give you any pleasure at all, you wouldn't be under their power. But John Lee has a nice analogy. He says it's like being a slave to crooks and thieves. They make you work hard. They give you a little bit, throw a few scraps at you. But then when the police come to catch you, they go running off, and you're the one left holding the bag. So are you really getting the kind of happiness you want out of them? How about putting them aside and letting the Dharma be the dominant factor in your life? Practice Dharma in line with the Dharma so you learn how to develop some dispassion for the things that are causing you suffering. It's because when dispassion comes, then the motive force that keeps you fabricating, keeps you wandering on, is gone. And things are allowed to cease, and you find out what remains when all the fabrication ceases. So all this grows out of appropriate attention. This is why when the Buddha was teaching children, he would start with questions like this, because he wanted to train them in the art of questioning, learning which questions are worth attending to, which ones are not. And focusing on the fact that your actions really do make a difference. It's really all up to you. So you want to look into your motives for acting, and you want to look into your actual actions, and you want to look into the results very, very carefully. And keep that basic motivation. The basic motivation is goodwill and compassion. You don't want to suffer. You don't want to cause anybody else to suffer. How can you get better at that? Always hold that question in mind.